Today is July 20th, 2021. My name is Deborah Schwartz, and I am sitting with Steve Beecroft. We are here on behalf of the Mill Valley Public Library and the Mill Valley Historical Society Oral History Program. In the past, our interviews have been conducted in the sound room, the recording room at the basement of the Mill Valley Public Library, but because of the pandemic, the COVID-19 pandemic, we are recording from the comfort of our own homes. I'm very, very pleased to have Steve with us today. This is an interview I've been trying to capture for many years. Steve is an interesting fellow. Who is he anyway? I have seen him be so many people, so many faces, so many costumes, genders, questionable. I've seen him in sword fights, and I've seen him in death scenes and chaos and shipwrecks and glorious magical moments in the forest, in comedy and in heartbreak. I have seen him in singing beautifully, acting beautifully, and moving the audience that watches aptly as he and others perform in the beauty of the Mill Valley Public Library's amphitheater under the redwood trees as a member of my favorite Shakespeare company in all the world, the Curtain Theater. Steve, it's really great to have you here, finally, to tell your story about yourself and the Curtain Theater. I have lots of questions, and I'm particularly excited to be able to. Last year, we didn't get to watch any performances. There were no performances anywhere, but this year there will be. So it's a perfect time to finally capture your story and to understand better the gift that Mill Valley is giving in the productions put on by the Curtain Theater.
Well, thank you for having me. As I said, it's wonderful to be here. Like you said, we've been trying to get this organized for a few years now. For some reason, it never happened, and it's wonderful to finally be speaking to you about this.
Well, you're a hardworking man. I can appreciate it. And I will always be coming back to watch the show, so I'll always be there to nag you, and finally it worked. Let's get a little background before we jump into your participation with the Curtain Theater. Just to help our listeners understand a little bit more about who you are, maybe you can tell me a little bit about where you were born and how you came to Mill Valley and how you came to be an actor and a singer, performer.
Sure. Very briefly, I'm Canadian. I grew up there. And then for my postgraduate work, I went to England, Cambridge University. I did a master's and a PhD in international relations, then worked in London for another 5 years or so, moved to Hong Kong, worked there for 5 years as global head of sales for an Asian broker. And then I've been in the Bay Area for a little over 20 years now. I've always been, well, from high school years at least, I've been involved in theatrical endeavors as well as singing endeavors. That carried to university, and after a respite when work was just way too hectic to make it happen, I got back into it again and started with the Curtain Theater in 2010.
Somehow it always feels like you've been with the Curtain Theater, and the Curtain Theater has always been in Mill Valley, but it's just been here for about 11 years.
Well, the Curtain's been here since 2001, actually.
2001. So. But yeah, you're
I joined in 2010, but yeah.
So that explains a little bit how good you are with accents.
Well, I try to. It helps when you've lived in England and traveled all around to do particularly British accents. But, you know, the play in 2019, I played a crazy French doctor there, you know. Of course, using some of my French-Canadian things on that. So, yeah, it certainly helps.
Yeah. Well, you look so normal in real life when you're not all dressed up. One might pass right by you and not understand how many people you can be and how many dire situations you can be in, but only in August and September.
Correct. Correct.
Well, let us just jump in right to it, shall we?
Sure.
About the Curtin Theater. I did a little research before our interview today, and I learned that the original Curtin Theater was an Elizabethan playhouse. Maybe you can talk a bit about that.
It was one of Shakespeare's very first theaters. Before he went to the Globe, he performed a lot of his plays at the Curtin, which paradoxically did not have a curtain in front of the stage. But that was always one of his original. That's where we got the name for it from. We felt that was an homage to Shakespeare and to the original company. And so, yeah, it's a great company, the Curtin Theater. I love it because not only is it free theater, which is wonderful, and in a totally fantastic place in the Redwoods in the middle of Mill Valley. So those are all tremendous pluses. But I think what we try to bring to it reflects what Shakespeare's companies were like at the time. Remember that in London in that period, in the Elizabethan period, going to the theater was a very big deal. It was a major source of entertainment. The percentage of the population of inner London that actually went to the theater was extremely high. It was the entertainment thing to do. And they would always have buskers out there ahead of time. They've had jugglers. They'd have other things going on. There would be food served. And Shakespeare would bring in, the company would bring in music and dance and clowning and other things. So it was holistic entertainment. And that's somewhat what we try to do at the Curtin. We have our own band run by Don Clark, who write almost all the music that is played. We have original choreography and fight choreography from myself. We have, you know, excellent actors. We go out and we entertain the audience before shows. I'm often one of the ones, you know, stealing food and going out and having fun with audience members beforehand. So the idea is when people come, however soon they come before the show, until the very end of the show, they're thoroughly entertained. And so that really stemmed from looking at how Shakespeare's performances occurred, both at the Globe and at the Curtin before it. And that's, we've sort of taken that and brought it here to Mill Valley, which I think is kind of special.
Equally special is the time of year, because in late August, the light changes.
Yes.
There starts to be a golden cast that goes across the forest. I'm a hiker. I've seen it many times. There is a trill in the air. It's like summer's just met up with fall and they have fallen for each other. There's an electrical charge, and during your performances, I've seen it so many times, that as the performance goes on, the light is changing, the light's filtering through these magnificent redwoods. The smell of the bay trees is wafting through the air. That you can smell the coffee and the food that you sell. The music filters through. It's interesting how sound travels in a forest, actually.
Right.
And it is and then of course it's outdoor seating and on rock, very informal, very small town, and for free.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything like this anywhere else in the Bay Area that you know of?
Not really that I know of, you know, certainly not Shakespeare. There's the odd free production in the East Bay that I've seen in the past, but nothing quite like this, which is actually, I like to think we put on very, very good performances. As I say, everything from the costumes to Steve Coleman's wonderful, wonderful sets, to the music, to the performances, you know, the whole thing I think is pretty well done. And for that to be free, is kind of an amazing thing. And you know, I think it impacts the community a lot. We get a lot of families, a lot of young children coming. Often it's their first experience to Shakespeare. And I'll even get people, you know, kids coming up to me downtown and said, "You're the Shakespeare man." Which, believe me, I've been called a lot of things worse than that. You know, so it's pretty wonderful. We get people coming to our rehearsals. Just to watch how we prepare for this stuff. You know, it's not a lot, but people will come through and they'll stop for 20 minutes and watch us rehearse or watch a sword fight or whatever. And then as you get closer to the end, often you'll get people, actually kids mostly, coming to actually sit down and watch for like a half an hour or sometimes an hour as we're rehearsing things. So they get into it, and it's become a real part of the community. I certainly hope that is the case, and it feels like it is.
I think so. I mean, you have my vote. I've many times been coming down the Dipsy Stairs or coming back from Cascade Canyon, and I hear the practicing. And mm-hmm. I think, oh, goody, it's coming. It's coming.
Yeah, it's fun.
I interviewed Steve Coleman. He is somebody unusual and wonderful and magical. I read on the website, you're a nonprofit. The Curtin Theater is a nonprofit.
Yes.
And we'll get into this later, how very important it is. You do rely on the kindness of strangers in the donations during the performances and in the donations. We'll talk about it later. The way you manage to stay afloat, and I agree with you, this is a very high quality performance. The costumes are beautiful. The music is amazing. The orchestra is amazing. And they're all dressed in costume as well.
Yep.
And the set designs are incredible. I've seen Shakespeare all over the place, and you're up there to the very best. I mean, I'll keep using superlatives because I know this to be true, at least in my limited experience, that this is really a wonderful quality production. Who else? It says on the website, our organization was formed by Mill Valley Arts producer John Leonard
mm-hmm.
and set designer Steve Coleman, who we all know from the Throckmorton Theater, and artistic director Mikkel Clifford.
Right.
Tell me a little bit about this group.
Well, the only one that is still involved with the company is Steve Coleman. John Leonard is my neighbor up the street here on Molino Avenue, and I still see him regularly, but he was involved in the company for about 10 years and then decided, you know, it was time to back off, so he did so. I never met Mikkel Clifford. He was only involved really in the original production or two. The real stalwarts of the Curtin Theater are Curtin Theater board of directors, and that consists of Michelle DeLatre, who's directing this year's production of Twelfth Night, starting August 14th. She's been involved in the company right from the beginning. And she directs, she's in the band, she's acted a few times, etc. Her husband, Don Clark, who's the musician, he runs the band, writes almost all the music that we play. He, again, has been involved from the beginning. And then the other three board members came later and tried to, you know, change the way things are done. And it's a very, very effective board. So myself joined in 2010. Diane Pickell-Gore is our stage manager and has done a lot of, you know, musical theater with me elsewhere. I brought her into the company. And she's been a board member, I think, since 2012, maybe 2014, something like that. I can't remember. And then just recently, we've had Nick Meredith of Mill Valley joining us as a board member as well. So it's a five-person board. You know, everything is done together. It's very harmonious in terms of the way we work. So I think it's got that behind it. And it's got a core of actors and musicians that have been with it for a very long time.
And what is your place in the company specifically?
I'm a board member. I tend to produce the plays, which has a lot involved in that people don't really recognize. But part of my job is to liaise with Mill Valley Recreation, our partners who let us use the stage. They're wonderful. And, you know, great, great sort of supporters of us, but I have to, you know, get arranged dates and move dates when things happen that they need the park for. I have to organize research, rehearsal space outside of that, because we only rehearse in the park on the weekends in the summer. We rehearse at my church, Church of Our Savior in Mill Valley. So I get that organized. It's organizing funding and working with the town and other things, dealing with any problems or complaints that come up. All that is the producer's role. plus generally be guiding and make sure everybody's on the same page in terms of when do we get the programs out, how do we do, you know, what's the advertising push and so on. So that's the producer's role. I also tend to be involved. I'm always the choreographer and fight director, and then I tend to be, I act in them. And in 2018, I directed as well. I directed Henry IV, Part 1.
The fight director. I've never heard anybody say that before. I'm the fight director. And, well, you should be, because there's some pretty fierce sword fights that take place.
Right.
Off the stage. They spill off the stage and into the grove.
Yeah, that was particularly in Henry IV that I had a battle. The latter part of the play is a long battle, and I had it circling the audience so people didn't know where to look. It was quite interesting. I think people really enjoyed it because it was all broadswords. It was very real. I go for realistic choreography, for whether it's, you know, it's wrestling or it's sword fights or it's just pure fencing. I always try to go fairly realistic. And that one, people would be watching action on the play, and then a fight would break out behind them. They'd turn around, and it was quite interesting. I think got a lot of support for doing that.
Yeah, that was a really good performance. Have you ever had dust in the face during a fight? I mean, you wonder about how it really must have been. There must have been a lot of dirt in the face and everything else.
Oh, for sure. No, and things, you know, you work as a fight director to get everything like a choreographer. You get it in sequence and it's all memorized and you know exactly how to do this and that action with it. But inevitably, sometimes things go wrong. And so you have to be able to adapt to that as well.
How many actors do you have? And are they, do you, you know, calling all actors, calling all actors and people come to just audition? Or do you have a core group of actors that you work with? How does it work in the Shakespearean world?
Well, for the Curtain Theater, we always hold open auditions. We always advertise to get, you know, those auditions so people can come. We also reach out to actors that we know elsewhere. For this show, Twelfth Night, we have 16 performers on stage. Others have been as low as 10, as high as, I think, 20. There's definitely some people who you have seen many times,
yes.
You know, very, very, very good actors. Grey Wolf, who's played Falstaff twice, and The Miser, etc. Heather Cherry, who's one of the wives of Windsor and played King Henry IV and has done all kinds of things before. You know, myself, there's a bunch of us who've done that, but nobody's assured of a role. We all have to get in there and audition and fight for the role, you know, with whoever the director is. The director makes a choice. So, mm-hmm. You know, and we've had, you know, visiting directors like Kim Bromley's done two, Carl Jordan did two, Michelle's directed a lot. I've done one. I may direct again in the future. So, but it's all up to the director who they choose. I would say that our actors come from, some are from, you know, Northern, from here, from Marin County, but we definitely always have actors from the East Bay, from San Francisco, Rohnert Park, Sonoma, and as far away as Half Moon Bay.
Interesting you said a woman playing Henry IV. I have noticed your adaptations may go from the less rigid classical Shakespearean experience to something that may cross centuries and not be modern even. Remember, what was the one you had where it was kind of a 1930s, I believe, with the gangsters?
Comedy of Errors.
And then you have a woman playing Henry IV. Is this typical?
I mean, people, different companies will do different things. A lot of the time we do it in traditional period. We will do it in Elizabethan period. For Henry IV, which I directed, I did that in the period that it came from, early 1400s. But I decided on using a woman as Henry IV, A, because it made the relationship between her and her recalcitrant son, Prince Hal, kind of more interesting and a different dynamic than it would have been if it was a man, if it was a father. So Heather's just an excellent actor, and I knew she would do a fantastic job at it. So I thought it brought a different idea to it. Now, we have to step back and look in Shakespeare's world when he performed, of course, and he did perform as well as write the plays. There were no women allowed on the stage. So you had, you know, young boys or teenage boys playing women, you know, all the time. So it was a lot of gender bending that occurred. I would say as well that Shakespeare was an amazing writer for how he portrayed women. If you go to his plays, women are often the smartest, the strongest characters in his plays. Mm-hmm. Very, very regularly, that is the case. He understood women, I think, pretty darn well. He thought they, you know, doubtless thought they should have been on the stage. But, you know, I think he really tried to make women characters extremely intricate, detailed, and strong. So the idea of having a woman play Henry IV, for me, came from that to a degree, and from the fact that I thought Heather would do a good job.
Interesting that he had this perception of women and how it is could be so readily available to modern audiences to mm-hmm. be able to enjoy. It would be a lot harder to sell these kinds of performances when women are very belittled nowadays because of, you know, women empowerment and equality and all of that. So the plays in that way have a significance culturally for us. They are stories that can impact us in a modern level.
He was centuries ahead of his time in many, many things, but the Bard was just way ahead of his time in the way he portrayed women, for sure. That would not come about really for probably 2.5-3 centuries.
Have you done this research on Shakespeare? I mean, have you delved into the character and the person?
Oh, for sure, yes. I have a whole library of books about Shakespeare, about the plays, about literary criticism, etc.
May I ask your opinions about Shakespeare, your observations about the man,
sure.
Woman, I don't know.
My opinion of Shakespeare?
Uh-huh, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of mystery around who this person really is. I've heard so many stories. I suspend opinions, so I'd like to know yours.
I would say this, you know, in terms of the authorship controversy, I don't think it really matters. Somebody wrote this, and it's the most amazing work I think exists in the world. I fell in love with Shakespeare really from the first time I heard it as a young boy. The rhyme, the meter, the depth of the words, the humor, the deep romantic love and expressions that occur grabbed me very much even as a young boy. So I've always been into it. In terms of Shakespeare, I mean, I can go into all the different, you know, theories that are there. I don't tend to hold with them, frankly. I think a lot of that comes from the view that a writer has to write from his own experience, sort of Mark Twain type thing. And that he has to understand how, you know, nobility works. It must have been someone who was noble. It must have been the Earl of Essex. It must have been whoever. And I think that is not correct. He had a very good education in grammar school. He was exposed to theater a lot. Remember that he's writing his plays under deadlines, right? He's not sitting there writing a book. It works out to be the most fantastic works ever in theater, but he's writing under deadlines all the time, changing things, getting actors to be involved, and they put an input and he changes it, is the way I see it. And so it was an organic developing thing. And he's using stories, other people's stories, all the time. You know, if you look at As You Like It, the whole idea behind that came from Lodge. It came from a different story about Rosalind. But he takes it and he makes it extremely different, puts in fantastic language and humor and other things, and you've got a very different play, but on a central theme. And he did that all the time. Comedy of Errors comes from Plautus, Roman writer. So, I mean, you've got all this stuff that he's using as source material. He's just putting his own genius on it in terms of developing character and developing language, I would say. And so I, you know, to me, it doesn't frankly matter who wrote it. Somebody wrote this wonderful treasure of work that we celebrate in the Curtin Theater and that I love to read. You know, that person was an immense genius that has not been seen before or since, in my opinion. Was it the, you know, the person from Stratford? I think so. I think there's a lot of evidence to prove that. You know, when you have, you know, Ben Jonson arrival and saying that he was the man for all time, that he's, you know, this is not somebody who loved him. This is somebody who believed it about him. And so you get all these commentary from his own people at the time. So I think the controversy comes from people looking back and wondering how Shakespeare became Shakespeare, and sort of putting their own construct of what genius is, that genius sits in a room and works on their own life experiences or whether, and then comes out with something on paper. But that's not the way Shakespeare worked at all.
In an era when a large number of films are vapid and with such minimal character development, that is why I so enjoy your Shakespeare productions, because his study of character and the development of characters through and their transformations are so keen and stunning, mm-hmm. that it's moving. You find yourself in the story, just in your hanging on every word. And speaking of the word, this, I know there, I've heard that there's a way that you speak Shakespearean. I mean, if I was to read it today, it would butcher it. But if you were to read it, you have a way. What is that way? Is that training? Is that, you know, is there some way that you're guided or trained to say these things in such a way that they're so alive and attainable to the listener?
I think it's, you know, I come from originally being a singer. Okay. So that helps me no end because of the learning how to project, learning how to enunciate, etc. Comes from that. But there's also just understanding how Shakespeare flows in terms of the rhyme. Of it, in terms of the meter of it, in terms of the emotional build and ebbs and flows of his work. And that comes from experience. I mean, people teach it in college, you know, who do acting courses, they get taught how to do it. But I don't think it has to come from there, right? What he's writing is so, in many cases, so profound or so humorous that once you understand it, you start to pick up on things. So if you go to Henry V, for example, starts with the best introduction I think ever written to a play, where the prologue, person called prologue, comes on, and he basically wants to explain what the play is about. And so his first line is, "Oh, for a muse of fire that would ascend the brightest heaven of invention." And it goes on from there, and he talks about basically, at one point he says, "It is your thoughts that now must take our kings, carry him across distances, movement from here and there, across time and space. We're going to work on your imagination to do this." And so he's setting the play up. He's introducing it. And we do this at our shows, by the way. We do it differently. We sort of have a song to begin with, or as in Henry IV, like I did this whole introduction of who are the key groups of actors, what was happening, so that, and then I get people cheering for the different groups, right? You get people into the play right from the beginning, but they also gain knowledge of what this play is about, right? So even if you've never seen this play, you've never read it, you hopefully at the end of that knew what it was about, who the key sort of groups of characters were, and you got brought into the production right from the beginning. And that's critical for us because we're often dealing with people who haven't seen a particular play, right? Mm-hmm. But in terms of the word, I think, yes, there is a different way of speaking Shakespeare than you would others. You can do it without having a Shakespearean accent or a way of speaking, but you do need to be able to project, to enunciate, and even more so when you're on a stage in the middle of the Redwoods. That's one of the first things you'll do in rehearsal is when you start before, you know, rehearsing on the stage, you know, we'll stand back and say, "We can't hear you." And eventually actors get used to it.
Uh-huh. So can you give us an example? Just, is there any stanza or any part where just say it flat and then say it the way you say it?
Oh, wow. There's...
Not to put you in...
Well, there's so many to choose from. Blow, winds, and crack thy cheeks. Rage, blow, you sulphurous and thought-executing fires. Strike flat the thick rotundity of this earth. That's King Lear. Blow, winds, and crack thy cheeks. Rage, blow, you sulphurous and thought-executing fires. Strike flat the thick rotundity of this earth. All nature blow at once that makes ungrateful man. So it's a different way of...
Oh, yeah. Absolutely noticeable. Any other examples?
Oh, but yeah, you don't even want to get me started. But no, it's but again, you just have to feel into it. What, you know, what he's trying to get across, and you know, there's so many wonderful pieces of Shakespeare that you just sort of have to feel it in your mouth.
Do you ever feel like you are falling into it and being swept away?
Oh, sure. Sure. Yeah. I mean, just as for those people who, you know, love the movie, I mean, if you watch Shakespeare in Love, which I think is terrific, and what's really interesting in that movie is when they're rehearsing and he's finally got the play together and they're rehearsing and they're understanding where this is going, this tragedy. And you watch the actors who earlier were just kind of doing their own, now they're all watching in the play being rehearsed. They're being drawn into the story, and they do that very, very effectively. And you'll find that in our rehearsals. You know, initially it's all trying to remember your lines and where do you go and blah. But as you get beyond that, you can see actors, even when they don't have to be, to just watching the play develop, watching character develop, and the stories interweave. And it's quite amazing, actually.
Probably you're asked this all the time, but I have to ask. How in the world do you memorize all your lines?
I mean, it has its tricks, and there's, you know, there's always going to be one line or two that will pick you up and throw you down. But on average, I think Shakespeare makes it relatively easy because there's a music to it. There's a pattern to it. What light is light if Sylvia be not seen? What joy is joy if Sylvia be not by, unless it be to think that she is by and gaze upon the shadow of perfection. So that is from Two Gentlemen of Verona, which I'm hoping to direct sometime. But it's got a movement to it, right? The words fit, they aren't just words. They flow. They create a beauty in themselves that, you know, as an actor, it makes it easier to memorize. I mean, there's some stuff that's hard, don't get me wrong. There's some stuff that's just, you know, when he gets into some of his comic things and there's just, you know, lines that are kind of crazy that don't seem, you know, fit, but he's doing it for purpose. But that's harder. But generally speaking, it, you know, it takes time. You just work on it every day if you can.
I studied American Sign Language and I love that language. It's beautiful. It is, has dimension.
That's amazing.
So it is it seems to me that Shakespeare is similar in that way, that there's so much dimension to the movement and the and the words and the meaning that it sort of carries itself along.
Right. That's interesting.
Tell me about people that have inspired you along the way in your career.
My acting career, you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's difficult. I'm not sure. I mean, there's people that I've watched on stage that are, you know, amazing performers or on in movies as well. Kenneth Branagh, for sure. And I saw Kenneth Branagh, who's known as a director, and he did a lot of Shakespeare films. You know, Much Ado About Nothing is, in my opinion, the single best Shakespeare film ever made. But he did Henry V, which is great. I saw him originally as a performer in London on the Barbican with the Royal Shakespeare Company when he was 22 or 23, something like that. It's phenomenal. Very, very good. Very physical. Good comic. Sort of touch to him, spoke it beautifully, depth of emotion. So I guess if I was going to try to emulate anybody, it was him in terms of doing Shakespeare particularly. But, you know, there's great actors all over the place, which are wonderful to watch.
Tell me more about working in the theater itself. Any disasters? Any windstorms, rain?
Oh, gosh, yeah, sure. You know, from because I started doing primarily musical theater. And, you know, basically, I remember when I was doing Oklahoma and Summer Stock in Canada, I was playing Curly, the lead role. And I had to, you know, pull my gun and supposedly shoot or take a shot at Judd Fry. Of course, I did this with great physical aplomb, and then the sound effect didn't happen. There was no sound. So I took the gun and I said, just on a cheap Japanese thing. I just went on for like minutes ad-libbing on this, you know. So you get that kind of thing. In the curtain, we had one. It was quite amazing. There were, I can't remember what the production was. It was maybe 5 years ago. There was a lot of fires further north. And it created this heat effect that blew in the middle of performance in a wind. And the rain, the redwoods just started dropping branches and leaves. And like, we literally had to send a guy out in intermission and sweep the stage. And he came on once in the second act and swept again because like it was 2 inches deep on the stage. We were slipping around and it was quite amazing. So you occasionally get that sort of thing happening, which is a bit of a fun.
How about... It is a performance and it is live. I know that there's been some controversy about the plays. Let's talk about that a little bit.
About the curtain, you mean?
Yes, the noise.
Yeah. We particularly had there was a few neighbors behind on Cascade who complained about the noise. One of them, you know, came up and complained during a rehearsal in front of before a production. And so being one of the lead members of the board, I spoke to her and we changed things. We only rehearse in the evenings and the week before the show. That's the only time we rehearse in the evenings. And because of that event, we now go absolutely quiet at 9 o'clock. So we'll rehearse till 10. But I think it's actually about 8:30. We go completely quiet. So we're just talking like I'm talking to you. We're not projecting at all. There's no music. There's no sword fighting. So we try to be very cognizant of this stuff. There was, you know, definitely a period when, it was in 2019, where there were some real complaints and it got up to the Mill Valley, City Council. And so, I and others had to go and defend our position and say, look, we think the curtain's very, very good for the community. We will make our compromises to get the noise down. And we did X, Y, and Z, you know, but they were able to air their grievances. We responded with some compromises. But in the end, I think, you know, we had a huge turnout for that. Just a huge.
Yeah, a lot of community support for your theater.
Yeah.
It would be unthinkable not to have the curtain theater in
It was touch and go there for a while, frankly. But, you know, I'm glad we prevailed and we got to make some compromises and hopefully it won't be a problem again.
Let's talk about the ways that you are supported. First of all, the different agencies that support you and the ways at the end of each performance, the actors are out with their baskets and they're collecting donations. But I suspect you probably could use a little more help than that. I mean, I can't believe those donations keep you floating.
They're extremely important. The donations in the baskets after performances are extremely important. But no, we have some regular donors in the community. So, you know, Mill Valley Art and Garden Club, for example, has been a long-term supporter of the Curtin Theater, without whom we simply wouldn't exist. They are a financial supporter and help us in other ways as well. I have some, you know, individuals in the community that regularly donate, you know, $500, $1,000 to the Curtin Theater. We run a very, very tight ship in terms of budget. And, you know, considering what we actually end up putting on, it's quite amazing we get it done with that level of budget. But we definitely do have, you know, other financial supporters. And then, of course, in the town, the Mill Valley Arts Commission, Mill Valley Recreation are huge supporters for us as well.
I'm looking at the list of plays, since I'm going to just read them out loud, okay? Tell me if I missed anything. 2007, The Twelfth Night. 2008, Romeo and Juliet. 2009, Hot Day in
Ephesus.
2010, As You Like It. 2011, Merry Wives of Windsor. 2012, Much Ado About Nothing. 2013, King's Stag. 2014, The Tempest. That was a good one. 2015, The Winter's Tale. 2016, Comedy of Errors, another great one. 2017, The Miser. 2018, Henry IV, Part One. 2019, The Merry Wives of Windsor. And then 2020, Nada.
Yeah. Host. It's your 12th night. There's one in there, was a, I think it was a 2016 one, was, I think you said Winter's Tale, was it?
2015.
Yeah, 2015 Winter's Tale. That was actually a stage reading in the library. The play in the summer was Taming of the Shrew.
Oh, Taming of the Shrew. This is what's on your website. You're going to have to fix it.
Yeah, yes, we need to correct that.
Oh, Taming of the Shrew. Oh, that was so good.
That was fun. I like that play a lot.
Oh, yes.
That was directed by Carl Jordan. And I suddenly realized when you read that I started in the company in 2009 with A Hot Day in Ephesus.
Mm. It says also on your website, if music be the food of love, play on.
That's the first line in Twelfth Night.
Yes. And so that is what we have this August. It begins August 14th to September 6th, Saturdays, Sundays, and Labor Day, Monday.
Right.
All shows begin at 2 p.m. I'm there early.
Yeah, you always want to come early because it's usually some hijinks that happen.
Yes. Also, I bring my own chairs, and we have a particular place in the shade that we like. And also, we have to have our tea and our snacks and everything else. And you can bring your dogs. You can bring grandma and grandpa. You can bring a blanket. Better bring a coat.
Always bring a sweater.
It can be cool.
It can be. I mean, it can be beautiful, can be cool. We have seats out there, by the way. We always have, you know, our seats as well. But then behind that, there's benches, and then there's the hillside. So,
how many does the theater actually seat? I mean, what's the capacity of the audiences usually?
Because it's not all just seating. Anywhere up to about 130 maximum, I would guess. You know, if you really packed it up the hillside, some of the Henry IV performances that we had, and Taming the Shrew we did too, we had probably about 120 people.
We haven't talked much about your singing, Steve. Your voice. Truly beautiful voice.
Thank you. So, I mean, I always sang as a kid, and then I started doing musical theater, which I did a lot of. I do classical as well, so German Lieder concerts and things like that. I sing in choirs and conduct a chorale as well, a small chorale of doing a cappella work. So it's everything from really musical theater to classical to jazz to John Denver. I did a couple John Denver concerts back in 2017 as well at the church.
And you're quite involved with Church of Our Savior on Lovell Avenue.
Yes, I am.
Let's talk a little bit about that.
It's a wonderful church, and they're wonderful to us. As I say, we do our midweek rehearsals in the church. So they're very, very important at the Curtin Theater. Our rector there, Father Richard Edward Helmer, is awesome. He's not only a really good guy and a great speaker and priest, but he's also my accompanist in a lot of my concerts. He's a concert pianist as well. And so when we did a Curtin Theater benefit concert of Les Miserables, I did a condensed version of that, which I cut the score and wrote the narration and then played Valjean and got the cast together. Richard played the entire show on piano. It was amazing. He's incredibly talented. So I'm, like to be surrounded by talented people. It's always fun.
And there are many in our beautiful little town.
There are. It's a terrific place to live.
Is there anything we haven't talked about that you'd like to add to this interview?
Yeah, I'd just like to, to say thank you to all the people who supported the Curtin, like yourself, throughout the years, because, without an audience, we're not going to be performing. There's no reason for us to perform. Everybody who supported us financially, who supported us when there was people trying to close us down, who throw money in that basket after the shows, or just come and get entertained and laugh and sing and cry, whatever it is, it means the world to us. Like, we love performing, we love doing this, and the community has been really wonderful. And I'd like to thank everybody who comes and supports Curtin Theater.
And I'd like to invite everyone to come and be generous with their support, because it is very clear for anybody attending these performances that a tremendous amount of energy goes into them. I mean, there's blood, guts, and heart and soul that are packed into these performances to the very end and beyond. When you're out there communicating with the audience and shaking hands and smiling and engaging, and when I think anybody else would just want to go sit backstage, lay on their back and breathe after such performances. So we owe you a debt, we really do. And I invite everyone to support your nonprofit, beautiful, wonderful Shakespeare Theater. And I don't know if this is going to be a terrible thing to ask or if I'm going to have to wait, but can we close with the song?
No. You should have taken the one from Henry IV, the Drink Boys Drink song. That was a great one. We do a lot of different music in the shows, and it really is integral to what we do. And you're going to hear some very nice tunes in Twelfth Night. Don's outdone himself. So come and we're actually the dancing, because we're setting it in Nova Scotia, Canada, around the turn of the century, as in 1900 kind of period. So Steve Coleman's will have sets, showing parts of the sea and sort of houses on the shoreline and what have you. And we've chosen to do contra dancing as the main choreographic style, which is sort of relative of square dancing to a way, but older. And so that's what I've been having to do, teach the people to do. So it's going to be fun. And there's some good music in it for sure.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for giving me your time. I know you're very busy, but I feel like I've just had a wildlife sighting, finally captured. Here you are after all these years.
Thank you for your experience.
Yeah, thank you so much. I support you 100%. And I will see you at the performance. God be with you, and good health to the entire production. And thanks again for everything.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
On behalf of the Mill Valley Public Library and the Mill Valley Historical Society, we thank you. And that's a wrap.